This is Finn Balor, and you are listening to another wrestling podcast.
Another wrestling podcast! The cream of the crop!
Nobody does it better!
They make sure you ain't booty!
The best there is, the best there was, and the best ever will be!
It's time for... another wrestling podcast.
We are taking over.
Drink it in, man.
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
And if you're not down with that, then he's got two words for ya.
When we talk about the legends of the sport, there's only two in my book.
AWP, another wrestling podcast.
All right. Welcome to another wrestling podcast. This is episode 137. I'm Credo.
And I'm Angry Cooter.
And together, we are the Social Assassins.
And of course, as always, we're just calling it how we see it, baby.
That's right, man. Picking apart the world of pro wrestling each and every week here on AWP. Cooter, man, we have another great guest this week. Who's joining us?
Joining us this week, we have the new King of Bethany, Travis Flip Gordon, Credo.
That's right. He's taken Northeast Wrestling over by storm. He's had an incredible year. He's going to be sitting with us, talking with us about, anything and everything Travis Gordon has to tell us. So stay tuned for that one. You don't want to miss it. He's a high flyer in the business, Cooter. He's doing some impressive moves we could only dream of. And that's, that kind of makes for a great topic today of high flyers. I mean, we've talked about giants. We've talked about anything and everything wrestling. That's what's great about listening to us, because each and every week we got a new evergreen topic. You know, something that's... we're not just talking about Raw or some shows. You know, something that you can actually listen to no matter what, if it's episode 1 or 137. So, how about flying high, baby? You want to fly high today? Talk about some high flyers in the business?
I'm always flying high, and it's usually with a beer in my hand. Oh, and by the way, I'm really digging that new theme music that's opening up the show this week.
Thanks, man. You know, you got to change it up a little bit. You got to give the fans something else to look forward to now. So, it's just a little bit of an upgrade. Yeah. Especially thank Catskill, Jay Avery, and Joseph Carney. They helped us out with this music. We've been friends for so long. We've seen them at shows. They're DJs. They're in bands. I just want to say thank you, basically. So, guys, thanks for the intro, which we'll probably be hearing each and every week from now on. So stay tuned to AWP for that one. Cooter, man, besides talking about wrestling, we also go to a lot of shows. And this week is no different. We're going to be heading over to Bethany, Connecticut for the Best Around is Coming to Town. December 10th, 7 p.m. at the Northeast Wrestling Arena on 40 Peck Road, Bethany, Connecticut. Guys, head on over to northeastwrestling.com. We're going to see Brian Anthony, the three-time Northeast Wrestling Champion, taking on TK O'Ryan, one-third of the kingdom. So he's this is a championship match. TK O'Ryan could be walking out as the new Northeast Wrestling Champion. There's going to be a special guest appearance by Taven Claus, Matt Taven, for everybody out there. So the kingdom's going to be represented this weekend. A lot of matches happening, and Ron Zombie's going to be there. We said the top of the show, King of Bethany, Flip Gordon, he's going to be there. He's going to be on the show as well. Mike Bennett is going to be taking on the Wrecking Ball with Gursky. Guys, just head on over to northeastwrestling.com. We'll see you there this Saturday. It's the last show for Northeast Wrestling this year, so they're getting in the Christmas spirit. So tell them AWP sent you, and we'll see you this weekend.
Oh, no question. Really looking forward. That's a great card. Really looking forward to checking that out this week, Rito.
Yeah, man. So, each and every week, besides our usual topic, we're still going to talk about the biggest things in the week. So let's get right into the week that was. Not to talk about the whole pay-per-view, but we are coming off the TLC pay-per-view, SmackDown's branded pay-per-view this year. Just off the top of my head, coming out of there, we have the Wyatts as the new tag team champions for SmackDown. Now, they're doing the whole Freebird rule, but Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt won. Do you think it should have been Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton winning, or should it have been like a Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper kind of a thing?
You know, I really love that team of Wyatt and Orton. I said this last week. I think it's a great team. They got good chemistry. They even had a great match. It was a return match on SmackDown this week from that pay-per-view. So I'm interested to see where this goes. I kind of hope they reign for a little while, quite honestly, because I really dig this team. I think as much as I love Randy Orton by himself as that Predator, to put him in a stable, you know, it just really accents it. And there's just so much that could potentially happen because of it. But what do you think of my wife, who's no longer at home anymore, Alexa Bliss, winning the SmackDown Women's title, my friend?
You know, I knew it was going to happen, but at the same time, I was surprised it happened. I honestly thought they were trying to at least build Becky up a little bit more as a dominant women's champion. But I feel like as much people wanted Becky to be champion, she didn't. I don't know. I feel like she hasn't gotten the fans behind her like Sasha and Charlotte are doing on Raw. And I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I'm not seeing the fans really behind Becky all that much more for being a champion. So it is also smart to move that title around because they kind of need to build some other contenders up on SmackDown. They're really lacking talent over there, or just at least people to be champion. So at least giving it to Alexa, I think, builds the women's division up over there a little bit. And hopefully she holds on to it for more than a month.
Yeah, you know, I'm happy that she won it, but I am going to disagree with you just a tad because Becky Lynch has got one hell of a fan following. I mean, she gets great reactions every time I see her come out. So, I mean, I think what you're saying is correct. I think, especially for that first year with this brand split, we're going to see a lot of title changes because I think they want to build certain people up so they can have a real good backbone, mm-hmm. you know, for each roster. And I think if you have a couple of people that held the belt and make them look strong, you know, it just makes everybody look good that we have, you know, contenders facing these people who we've built up. I mean, that's really what you got to do. I mean, you're basically starting from scratch.
That's right. You know, also coming out of this pay-per-view, we had AJ Styles retaining the WWE Heavyweight Championship. Now, if there's anybody that can make Dean Ambrose look good in a ring, it's AJ Styles. Unfortunately, man, he injured his leg. They didn't really say, you know, the severity of his injury, but he's wearing a boot, and that also put a hold on James Ellsworth's title match. So,
Mr.
Ellsworth interfere, but what do you think about this?
I was surprised that you went there so early. It's only 5 minutes in the show, and you're already dropping your boy's name. You know, oh my God, James Ellsworth. I mean, you called it. I mean, you all knew it was going to happen. He was going to get involved in that matchup somehow, and either by trying to help Ambrose or turning heel, you knew he was going to help AJ win that fucking match. I mean, it was inevitable. I think they really had to pull the trigger on that just because they gave this bastard a contract, not realizing that, hey, the fans are behind this guy, but they're behind him as a jobber. They're behind him as an enhancement talent. We don't need him in storylines anymore. I mean, you could assign him to the SD Jones, you know, type of role. You know, he's going to be that enhancement guy who the people like. You know, we don't need him doing what he does, which is basically annoy the fuck out of everybody. Now you had this, you know, diamond in the rough. Now all of a sudden it's just a giant fucking annoyance. Maybe that's what they want. Who the hell knows?
I know. I was kind of looking forward to Tuesday, to where I actually thought this would have been the last of James Ellsworth that we would have seen. But now with AJ's injury, I'm like, how long are they going to prolong this now? So he still has a title shot, Cooter. So whatever.
Yeah, now you're going to get to see Dean Ambrose versus James Ellsworth. I mean, we should have seen that Tuesday. But again, you're right. AJ's hurt. They got to drag it out a little bit. Mm. So you're going to be seeing a lot of your boy in the main event picture there, buddy.
I hope he heals like Wolverine, man. I hope this is done very soon. But anyway, you know, moving right along, we don't talk too much Ring of Honor, but at the same time, I want to give a congrats to the Kingdom. Matt Taven, TK O'Ryan, and Vinny Marcellia becoming the first ever Ring of Honor six-man tag team champs. Congratulations to them. They're going to be there this Saturday in Bethany for Northeast Wrestling. But Cooter, man, the six-man tag team champs, champions for Ring of Honor, the first time ever. You know, this is almost, I feel like WWE could have had this a few years ago when they had the Wyatts in full, the Shield in full, you know. And but they're kind of playing that Freebird rule these days with the New Day and now the Wyatts. But I don't know. Congratulations to them. But do you think we'll ever see a six-man tag team championships, or they're kind of, you know, doing what they are now? They're doing fine with what they're doing now.
Yeah, I think they got too many belts as it is. I mean, we have 50 belts per show, and yeah, I don't really see that happening. But yeah, definitely congratulations, you know, to the New Kingdom here. I mean, I've always been a big fan of Matt Taven, you know, Northeast Wrestling, now seeing him in Ring of Honor. And I got to, you know, give a shout out to Ring of Honor just because I've actually seen a couple of their matches from their last show, their last pay-per-view, and now we know why NXT is so stacked. It's because of companies like Ring of Honor and because of companies from back in the day like TNA who helped make great talent and make former WWE talent really shine. They helped them find their niche. You know, I mean, just incredible. I mean, Cody Rhodes turning heel in New York, giving people the jerk-off sign and flipping them off. I'm like, who would have ever thought you would have seen that coming? It was incredibly awesome. I loved it. Shout-outs to fucking Ring of Honor. And just keep doing what you're doing because you make me want to watch something other than WWE, and I really enjoy it.
Definitely. I hope they really get a better TV deal, too. I mean, I'm talking like, you know, Impact TV deal to where they're on Spike. I would love to see, you know, money given to Ring of Honor, putting them on like a Spike TV kind of a show or something. But hopefully they get picked up a little bit more than what they are now. But moving right along, Cooter, man, Linda, there's a McMahon in the White House now. Linda McMahon,
oh my God, no,
is in the Trump's cabinet. She's like the small business secretary, something to that effect. Did you see this coming? Was the writing on the wall? And do you think Vince is just scrounging to probably get a spot in Trump's cabinet?
She's just like, oh my God, she's just like Hillary Clinton. Yeah, I said it. You know why?
Why is that?
I mean, you know, Bill was in the oral office with Monica Lewinsky, and you know, good old Vinnie Mac was in the Stamford, Connecticut building with God knows of how many of those divas from the Attitude Era. I mean, it was all over television. I mean, they got a lot in common. Maybe she could be a good politician. Yeah. All right. No, all jokes aside, you know, the woman helped, you know, build a huge company. I mean, from what I read, originally it was a 13-man operation behind the scenes to now it's this worldwide, you know, powerhouse. I mean, she's partially responsible for that. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of the credit's got to go to Vince, but, you know, behind every man is a good woman. And, you know, Linda is a very good businesswoman. Maybe she can do some good. I mean, she's going to get, you know, crapped on because of her lack of experience in terms of politics, but the woman knows business, and you can't deny that.
It's so funny. I saw somebody wrote, I think it was like Kayfabe News or something, to where it was like Linda McMahon turns on Vince, where she joins Trump or something like that, because reminiscing. I'd have to find it, but it's really funny. Even if you're thinking about that right now, it's still kind of funny because they like made it into a storyline of how Linda joins Trump, and it was kind of funny. But regardless, my girl Mickie James, man, is returning in January, who signed a new multi-year deal, and I believe she's going to be with the SmackDown brand. I love it, man. She is – I love her. I love Mickie James. Let's just put it that way.
Not love Mickie James? She's awesome. She's fun to watch. She's another one of those women. Imagine Mickie James in her prime against these amazing athletes that are coming out of, you know, NXT. I mean, just, and she can still go, and she proved that in her matchup against Asuka at NXT TakeOver Toronto. I mean, she's just timeless.
We just saw her last year for a Northeast Wrestling event, to where she wrestled 6 weeks after giving birth. I mean, this she's incredible. And, you know, I hope it's more than just a put-over deal, because I think the women's division, all in all, needs some of these vets, if you will. And she's not old to where she can't go. I think Mickey James can still go plenty, but I hope it's more than just putting them over. Like, I feel that she could come in, win the women's championship on SmackDown, and, you know, hold on to it for a little bit, and then, you know, have somebody beat her, giving them more credibility, which is kind of what I always said it too before, and you'll hear me say it again, to where I wish they kind of did that with Natalya, because honestly, she's the only one around still working that's like the vet out of the women. So it's kind of nice to have her come back. Maybe we'll get other people come back as far as the women go. But I mean, Mickie James, probably one of the best women's wrestlers WWE has ever had. So it'll be nice to see what she can do for the division. You know, they need these stars to help build up these younger girls. You know, they need them to help work with them, you know?
You know, let me ask you, do you think she'd be better off in NXT? Because I mean, she likes to work a little bit more of a harder style. You know what I mean? It just seems when you get to the main roster, you're kind of dumbed down as opposed to the kind of matchups you would have in NXT. And I think she prefers that, and I think that the girls down there could learn a lot from somebody like her who's, you know, been doing this for God knows how long now. What do you think?
Well, my only thing with that is that I feel like that's been happening too much in NXT. I feel like we already overexposed the people coming in from the outside of developmental, as far as like Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, and so on. So we're bringing Mickie James into NXT, where I get it at one hand. On the other hand, I'm like, it's just too many vets in the developmental league. I mean, I think they need – and it's crazy what they're doing on the main roster this year. I mean, okay, we've seen like the Headbangers and, you know, the Spirit Squad, but – It's like the WWE is rewriting how they work, because they're bringing in names who made names for themselves outside of the ring, like look the whole Cruiserweight division, to where now they're also bringing back some of these, I'm just going to say legends or past performers or past superstars or whatever, like now Mickie James, to where I think a few years ago I would have never seen this happen. It was almost like as soon as you left WWE or went to work with somebody else, you were like blacklisted. You know what I mean? To where WWE didn't need anybody anymore. They were creating their own stars coming up through NXT, and now it's like that door opened, and it's just a whole different field nowadays. And having Mickie James return onto the main roster, to where she did that one-off, though, in NXT for putting over Asuka, but now she could take her, you know, career, her status in pro wrestling, and kind of, you know, put that on other girls, whatever brand she is going to be on, whether it's SmackDown or Raw at the end of the day, to where they need that experience, you know, just on the main roster. I mean, yes, she could do good in NXT, but I think she could even help them out even more on the main roster.
Yeah, that's true. And what's so great, not only is she great in the ring, but Credo, she is hot as fuck. God damn, I love her.
Well, yeah, how can you follow that? But
let me segue, then I'll help you out here.
Segue.
All right. Well, they showed the match from Osaka, Japan, where Nakamura has regained the NXT title from Samoa Joe in Japan. God, another title bouncing around like a whore. How about that, Credo?
That's the most surprising thing to me this year, is that all these, like at the very end of the year, all these titles have just been going back and forth. The Cruiserweight Championship, the Raw Women's Championship, the NXT Championship. I'm getting confused, because at one point I remember in history where they said, you know, they don't like the titles, the championships, excuse me, flipping around so much. They want to build credibility on it. And now it's like every other week there's a new champion, and I'm like, what are they doing? I mean, it's not even just one championship. It's like it's a bunch of them.
Yeah, it makes a little bit more sense when you look at it from the perspective of, you know, typically we're in December right now, right? So typically around January you start shaping that WrestleMania card. So they want certain belts on certain people, because they're starting to build up those matchups for that big card. Creed, WrestleMania is what, 4 months away?
I know, it doesn't seem like a long ways away, but it's it is, but it isn't. That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, I mean, you're God, a third of a year away. I mean, the season starts at the Rumble, so I mean, these titles might bounce around a little bit for the next month, and then I guarantee you, come Royal Rumble, titles will be frozen. Yep. Until Mania. You watch.
Yep, and then even after Mania, I think there'll be whoever has them is going to have them for a while or whatnot. It's not going to be Zack Ryder wins it and then loses it on Raw, which I hate when they do that. Why waste that win at Mania to just lose it the next day? But anyway.
Such a great moment. Yeah, I know. But I digress.
Anyway, and if you guys are listening out there, please head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We're everywhere. Just follow us on the mothership of AWP. That's anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. But coming up, we have the King of Bethany, Travis Flip Gordon, joining us.
Yeah.
Look in the sky, watch it fly, I'm the man, right? I see you try, but you're running and you can't, I know. Here we go, time for the man, time for the show. Dive in the stands, climb up the ropes, where will you land? Nobody knows, watch out for that aerosol. Here you go, man, here's your loss. If it's a game, I'm the boss. Bring more bounce than I'm taking off. Cheers from the crowd, screaming so loud. Fly than the plane, why they check my name?
All right, joining us today is a U.S. soldier, a wrestler, and now royalty after recently winning the Northeast Wrestling King of Bethany tournament. Joining us is King Flip, Travis Flip Gordon. Travis, man, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, I just want to wish you a happy birthday as well. I'm a December birthday guy as well, so I just want to get that out there. You got a December birthday coming up, so happy birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You as well.
All right, man. So even though you're currently on the East Coast, you grew up in Kalispell, Montana. What was it like growing up out there? And did you have a lot of shows coming your way out there? Any indie shows or anything like that?
It's way different out there, especially living on the East Coast now. It's almost like two different worlds. I loved it, though. I grew up on a 40-acre farm. So we had all kinds of animals. Unfortunately, there was no wrestling out in Montana. No indies, no WWE, nothing.
Wow, so the only way, is it pretty much the only way you got into wrestling is by seeing it on TV, kind of?
Seeing it on TV, and then me and my brother would go try it on the trampoline.
Well, there you go. Yeah, we're kind of spoiled over here in the East Coast with, it's kind of like the wrestling capital of the world, if you will, with nonstop shows here and there. But I understand you got into amateur wrestling at the age of 12, and you have a background in gymnastics. You're pretty much a perfect storm to be a wrestler, if you will. Can you tell us a little bit about that, a little bit about amateur wrestling growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I remember starting amateur wrestling even before age of 12. I didn't take it like seriously, though. I remember doing it here and there. And then I've always just been like a flippy guy. I remember seeing the Olympics on TV one year. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I want to try to do that. And so I was self-taught. So I taught myself how to do backflips, how to do front flips. And when I got into high school, around like 8 or 9 is when I really realized, maybe 10, somewhere around that age group, I really realized, like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a professional wrestler. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I was like, okay, well, what can I do here in Montana to prepare myself? And that's when I got into amateur wrestling. So I did amateur wrestling all throughout high school, and then I moved to Idaho to go to college, and that's when I really got into gymnastics, and that's where they took my self-taught flips and turned them into, like, controlled.
Sure.
And that's why if you ever see some of my stuff, I'm in full control of my body almost at all times.
Definitely. And also, too, I said at the top of the show, you are also you were a U.S. soldier. Can you tell us a little bit about you in the military, maybe why you joined or where you're stationed and all that?
I enlisted in the United States Army National Guard back in 2012. Me and my best friend who's I consider my brother. We enlisted together, went to basic training together, were in the same unit together until I moved here. I've been in for 4.5 years, and I only have about 1.5 years left. I'm currently a combat engineer, but I enlisted as a construction engineer originally. So, but I love it. I love being able to serve. This country means a lot to me. I can't wait to get out, though, because then I can, it opens up more opportunities for me to wrestle. But as of right now, I'm very lucky and blessed to be able to do both.
Definitely. Now, like we said, you know, you came to the East Coast to pursue your dream. What was it like to pick it all up and move out here and just, you know, follow that dream, really, and just get into wrestling?
Oh, man, it was so hard. Initially, it started, the talk started, like, because of a heartbreak. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's it. I'm finally going to just move cross country and chase this dream. And nobody thought I was really going to do it. It was like, yeah, whatever. You guys will be back together next week, you know? But there was just something in me. I was like, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. I need to stop talking about it, and I need to actually take action. And so I legitimately packed up everything I owned, jumped in my truck, drove to Montana to say bye to all my family, and then drove all the way across the country. It took me 4 days. And the first place I went was the New England Pro Wrestling Academy.
Wow, that's
North Andover, Massachusetts. So.
Wow, yeah. So tell us, how did you find New England Pro Wrestling Academy, and who are you trained by, and how'd that all start out with you?
So originally, I wanted to come to the East Coast back in 2010 when I graduated high school, and at that time it was called the Chaotic Training Center, and I had noticed like the reviews online, and to be honest, I just googled pro wrestling schools in Boston. And because I have family around here on my dad's side, and I was like, oh, that'd be, I've always wanted to meet my family out here, get to know them. And so I just googled it, and this one was at the top of the list, the reviews. I'd seen numerous names that have come out of here, and I was like, hey, this is like rated like one of the best wrestling schools in the nation. So when I first got here, the head trainer, whose name is Brian Fieri, he wasn't actually here the day I came. And so I talked to another trainer, Amato and Johnny Vegas, and they told me to come back. That was on the Thursday I got here. They told me to come back on Saturday because he would be here. I came back, watched that practice, and I was signed up and started training on the first that following Tuesday.
Wow, so I took... No, I was going to say, wow, so when you walked in there, though, I mean, you kind of, you went in there with a lot more, well, in a way, experience than a lot of other guys, especially with, you know, the gymnastics and, you know, just amateur wrestling. Were they surprised at what you could do?
I think they were. They probably won't admit it to me. But I think they were like, okay, well, this, let's see what this kid has. But, I mean, since I've been here 2 years, I've seen so many people come and go that I thought that had potential, and they just didn't, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but, I mean, I honestly didn't think – when I first moved here, I knew I was moving here for wrestling, but I didn't think that I would be wrestling as quick as I did. I didn't think I'd be training right away because when I moved here, I didn't even have a job.
Mm-hmm.
I had an interview lined up, but I didn't even have a job.
Mm-hmm.
I had a place to live because I had family, so I knew I had a place to live. But I didn't know how, I didn't even know I was going to start training right away. But when I found out like some of the prices, I was just like, well, this is, after watching the first practice, I was like, I have to do this. I have to, like, I can't just not do it now.
Yep.
So I took my truck payment money and I gave it to the pro wrestling school and started training.
Well, it definitely has paid off. I mean, 2016 has been the year for you, I must say. But before we even get into that, I did read that Eddie Guerrero was one of the guys that influenced you growing up. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I loved Eddie. He's the one that got me into it. Like, just watching, like, his facials, his smile, the way he just entertained.
Mm-hmm.
He just took it to a whole nother level, and there's nobody that can really compete with him. I mean, people argue that Shawn Michaels is the greatest wrestler of all time, but I argue that Eddie Guerrero is.
Definitely. And you also said, too, Mick Foley, right? Has been a big influence on your career, too?
Oh, yeah. Mick Foley is very, very helpful for anybody that, like, if anybody needs help, he's one of those guys you can just go to and ask. If he's at a show, he literally watches every single match from the first one to the last one. And he'll watch, he'll give feedback. He's been very supportive of me, and he's just a great guy. And I've actually been a fan of his since I was young as well. And I love the hardcore style because of him, even though I don't do much of hardcore wrestling.
Sure. And now from Mick Foley, too, I recently saw, too, this year on the Taz on his show, he talked about you because of the high praises that Mick Foley gave you on Twitter from a show. How does that make you feel that so early on in your career, you're already receiving these high praises from these legends?
It was really shocking at first because Taz didn't hit me up about it. He actually just kind of like
Googled
it from the Taz show, not his actual account.
Yep.
But at first I thought it was a rib. Like I called around and I was like, do I acknowledge this? Or like, I don't know if this is real or if it's a joke. And I haven't even told Taz this, but like, I thought it was a joke at first. I was like, there's no way, you know? And cause actually Taz is one of my favorites too. It might be embarrassing to say this, but I named one of my cats after him growing up. But I was like, this guy's a badass, you know?
Yep.
But, yeah, it was crazy. Like to hear the things he was saying, because I was only maybe 8 months in at that time.
Sure, yeah.
And to hear the legends put me over, and just some of the things they were saying, I was just like, wow, this is incredible. Because like I'm still just learning. I'm still training every 3-4 days a week, you know.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Now, I'm curious about this question too, because a lot of things have changed, especially on the main shows, the WWE and whatnot. Since you even started training to even wrestling, guys like, you know, let's say James Ellsworth, who has proven that anything can happen in the WWE. Now, for you as a wrestler right now in the indies, you know, you can go from 1 minute that you're working on the indies to the next minute WWE wants you on TV. How does it feel as a wrestler knowing that now anything truly can happen from just being seen out there? I mean, a few years ago, this wasn't happening at all. I mean, you had to go through their system, get called up, and now they're kind of rewriting the book a little bit. And, you know, anybody and everybody is pretty much free to use. How does that make you feel, though, as a wrestler that, hey, it doesn't matter where you're working. I mean, anything could be, you know, you could be called up any minute, right?
Yeah, wrestling is amazing right now. We're in such a good time. It's almost like a baby boom for wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many guys are getting called up, which means there's so many top spots in bigger promotions like Ring of Honor, TNA that need to be filled, which means all the medium need to be filled. So it's just like there's so many opportunities open up for everybody. And it's just right place, right time, just like James Ellsworth. And that goes for any job or anything in your life. Mm-hmm. It's just right place, right time. And you just have to be ready. If you're not ready, then you know.
Yep. Definitely.
You're screwed.
Yep. Like I was saying too earlier, you know, 2016 has pretty much been the year for you over here in Northeast Wrestling. You know, you faced guys like Jushin Thunder Liger, Cody Rhodes. I've come to know you from seeing you at the Northeast Wrestling events. How has your time been with Northeast Wrestling? How has that been for you this year, too? I mean, just from your point of view.
It's been amazing. And honestly, the Bethany crowd, any crowd we go to with Northeast Wrestling, I always have the funnest time there. It's my favorite promotion to work for. The locker room is like a family. Like every show, it's like a family reunion every single show. With the fans, with the staff, with the wrestlers, with the refs, everybody. It's like a family gathering, and it's just the atmosphere is just so, like, it's amazing. I love it.
Well, you
absolutely
know,
love it.
Well, like I said earlier too, you've just became the king of Bethany. But even like I said too, like facing Jushin Thunder Liger or Cody Rhodes recently as well. I mean, did you think within a year or so you'd be facing these guys and main eventing the shows?
Oh, heck no. Honestly, like I said, when I first moved here, I didn't even think I'd be training. So I've lived in New England now for 2 years, and if you would have told me 2 years ago, I would have wrestled Jushin Thunder Liger, who's a legend, who's invented some of the moves I do before I was even born, and then to wrestle somebody who was on the on TV at the time, like Cody Rhodes, I would have told you you're crazy, you know?
Definitely.
I honestly, when I moved here, I didn't know how... I knew there was a wrestling school. I didn't know how the indies worked. I didn't know how popular the indies were. I figured I'd move here, start training, and hopefully pay for a tryout for an opportunity. I didn't know wrestling was the way it is over here, you know?
Definitely.
But I've been very blessed, very lucky, and I just got to keep working hard. And anybody that works hard, the sky's the limit, you know?
Definitely. Now, you know, speaking of Northeast Wrestling, December 10th, you will be facing Bobby Ocean at NEW's The Best Around Comes to Town. For anybody who has never seen you live, what could they expect?
Oh, gosh. Now that I'm the King of Bethany, I don't even know. That means I make my own rules, right?
That's, king? That's right, yeah.
Every match has to have a flip in it. No. I just like to go out there and have fun, to be honest. I'm an entertainer. I've always been like the center of attention. Like if there's a crowd, I have to be the center of attention. And that's what I love wrestling so much, because when I'm in the ring, I'm in the center. I'm the attention. And so I guarantee you, anybody that comes out to Northeast Wrestling, you're going to get your money's worth. Not just from me, but from the whole roster. It's always a fun time. It's always a fun show. And it's one of the best shows around, and that's why it has the name it has on December 10th.
And even some of one of the best crowds I've seen for wrestling in the area. I mean, granted, Bethany isn't, you know, a big stadium or whatnot, but those fans, man, they sure love wrestling, and they, you know, it's just fun to be a part of that with those fans there. How does that make you feel when you're in the ring? Because, you know, you're going out there, you know, you're not sitting in front of 10,000 people or whatnot, but still, the energy from that crowd makes it feel like a big stadium sometimes.
It really does. I mean, sometimes I like the Bethany crowd more than I like the stadium crowds that we do for them. Because they're just up all night. Like, they don't get tired, and that helps motivate us. Whether you're the first match or the last match, like, they treat you as if you're the match.
That's right. Well, I could talk to you all night, Travis. We barely scraped the surface with you. We really appreciate you coming on, taking the time out. But for any of the fans listening out there, how can they keep up with you? Where can they find you on Pro Wrestling Tees? Let the social media universe know.
For Pro Wrestling Tees, Instagram, and Twitter, it's The Flip Gordon. So on Pro Wrestling Tees, just put / The Flip Gordon. All my stuff will come up. On Facebook, it's Travis Flip Gordon or Travis Gordon. I have a page and a regular profile, which you can follow both. I actually just recently posted a video yesterday that I consider going viral because it has about 13,000 views already. And if you've never heard of me, definitely check out that video out, and you'll see what all the hype is about.
All right. Well, Travis Flip Gordon, thank you so much. And we will see you in Bethany.
Awesome. Thank you for your time.
All right. Once again, thanks to Travis Flip Gordon. You can see him this Saturday in Bethany, Connecticut for Northeast Wrestling. Head on over to northeastwrestling.com. Get your tickets. Get your tickets out the door if they're not sold out. We'll be there, and can't wait to see what's happening this weekend for Northeast Wrestling. But Cooter, you know, each and every week, there's something different we're going to be talking about in the world of pro wrestling. And we haven't, in 2 years of this show, have not talked about high flyers, the high-flying aspect of pro wrestling. You know, a lot of people hated these guys. They used to call them just spot monkeys and all this other stuff. They're just, you know, flying around doing stuff. Oh, that's not pro wrestling. It is pro wrestling, especially in this day and age. They built a whole new division off of it. They resurrected the cruiserweight division. You now have a TV show on the WWE Network, 205 Live. You know, the high flyers are here to stay, but it's just more than high flying. I mean, what comes to mind when I say high flyers? Is there anybody that stands out maybe to you?
Oh, God. And I don't want to steal yours because I know where you're going to go. But when I think of a high flyer, I mean, the first person I really thought of was Jeff Hardy for some strange reason, because, I mean, he's been involved in some of the greatest highlights of high-flying moments. Because, again, yes, was he a spot monkey? Totally. But there's not too many people who took the risks that he took the way he took them. I mean, I wonder how many pills he was on when he jumped off that ladder at WrestleMania and did that swanton.
Definitely, man. But even before that, I can even go back to, you know, I think when WCW had their cruiserweight division and, you know, a young Rey Mysterio stood out above the rest. And that's kind of like, I think the first time I started, you know, I don't know, just realizing like lucha or, you know, luchadors and just, you know, Mexican wrestling. And I, you know, looked up all into it, but it was just because of WCW's cruiserweight division and just seeing Rey Mysterio in the ring. Because if you look at Rey Mysterio then compared to now, like he looked like a little skinny kid.
Oh, I know.
And it's just amazing. Like you don't realize it, but you know he just did wonders back then. Because that Rey Mysterio of then is totally not the Rey Mysterio of now. And you know, he definitely got me into like a whole different world of wrestling, because I was like, we were stuck in this, you know, this Hulk Hogan Ultimate Warrior landscape for the longest time. And then all of a sudden came these other guys who were doing stuff that you've never seen before. And, you know, give credit to them. WCW definitely opened the door for a lot of this to be seen. They were definitely doing something different that even made the WWE get their own light heavyweight championship because it was becoming so big. And we all know how that turned out. But
can we make fun of Taka Michinoku for about 10 minutes? I got so much material. But no, I agree with you with the whole WCW thing. I mean, I think back to even before Rey Mysterio and before we had the influx of your Malenkos, your Jerichos, your Guerreros. I mean, I remember Jushin Thunder Liger versus Brian Pillman.
Wow. Yeah.
Brian Pillman, you know, before
Brian Bryan.
Yeah, man. That guy could go. I mean, just an incredible matchup those two had. And then that really to me was the jumpstart of cruiserweight wrestling in the United States. I mean, just a whole different world opened up to us. Now we got luchadors, we got these high flyers from Japan, and now we have an American guy who's trying to emulate that, and it was just something that was so different that we hadn't really seen.
Definitely. And you know, I'm even thinking about this as we're talking to, like, you know, what other companies back then had this kind of a feel? And I can even go back to, you know, and hear me out, like the Dean Malenko versus Eddie Guerrero match in ECW when he brought them in there before they even went to WCW. And it was, you know, it wasn't that the Dean Malenko was a high flyer, but it was kind of in that cruiserweight category with Eddie Guerrero, too. He was doing a few things, you know, that are high flying that nobody True. Else was really doing. But, you know, I think I would kind of categorize those guys into this high flying aspect. And the cruiserweight aspect, I know people are going to be like, he's saying Dean Malenko's a high flyer, but, you know,
yeah,
you know what
I
mean? He was a good compliment to the high flyers, if you will, as in wrestling, so.
Yeah, but I'm one of those guys, too, because I don't get annoyed, but I hate when people compare the cruiserweights to high flyers, because these cruiserweights nowadays, and even back then, they weren't just high flyers. I mean, yes, was the Lucha Libre style that we saw in the 90s when we really first got exposed to it with ECW and WCW. Was it a lot of high flying? Yes. But I mean, we had somebody like Ultimo Dragon who came in, who, you know, did a little bit of the high flying, but was also a very good technical wrestler. You know, I mean, guys like Eddie Guerrero was a great technical wrestler. Chris Benoit was a smaller guy, great technical wrestler. I'm surprised he was never in the cruiserweight division, but you know, I guess we know why. I mean,
one guy I want to bring up who might blow your mind. How about, don't laugh at me, but Bam Bam Bigelow. Now, okay, you know, obviously we know Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yes.
But I think when you compare of any all the big guys back then, he was the first big guy in my eyes that I had never seen any other big guy do from some of the moves he was doing. I mean, come on. Do you remember Bam Bam Bigelow just doing flips off the turnbuckle?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't even laugh at that whatsoever. I mean, he set the bar for a lot of big men to work, you know, a more agile style. I mean, look at somebody like a young Mabel, who was, what, 500 and some odd pounds and would still do a spinning heel kick, or not a heel kick. God, he used to do that one crazy kick, and you're like, fucking 500-pounder just did, yeah. What? You know, I mean, big guy like, all right, classic example, Mike Awesome was a huge guy doing big splashes off the top rope. Vader, if Bam Bam Bigelow wasn't doing moonsaults off the top rope, do you think Vader would have been trying it? I don't think so. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that one. Bam Bam Bigelow definitely, you know, helped create a whole new genre when it, in terms of working like a big man.
All right, now, Cooter, did you have, throughout the years, any particular favorite high flyer?
Of course I did. Mine was a little more on the unconventional side, of course, but I was always partial to the antics of New Jack.
High-flying New Jack.
Not exactly the high flyer you were thinking of, but I always used to get a rush out of watching him do those crazy dives through people over when they would be laying on tables. I mean, spot junkie, yes, I know. But listen, when it was new and nobody else was doing it on a regular basis, it was different. It was cool. It was just something you had to see. I mean, I've seen New Jack jump through tables. I've seen New Jack fall to the floor. I mean, I was there for the Danbury Fall. So, I mean, New Jack took risks that most people wouldn't dare do. I mean, that's why you have to respect the man.
You know, one of my top of all time is a man who I wish who'd come back and finish out his career, which is Rob Van Dam. You know, if ECW had me going with him, all the stuff he was doing, just the Rolling Thunder, you know, the jumps from the top of the rope. I'm not going to even call out the moves, but you know what I mean? We know Rob Van Dam's moveset. We know what he's done and just what he used to do in ECW to even now these days, man. The guy's he stayed in shape, but, you know, I want to see him come back just for a few things, just to end it on a high note and then maybe retire. But, you know, he's been doing that DDP yoga. Maybe he'll have one little last run in him. But, you know, Rob Van Dam, man, he was doing stuff nobody else was doing, and he was incredible. He was just a fun guy to watch, and he was the high flyer. But he was like a conventional wrestler who, you know, was also a high flyer. He was just, you know, when you spoke of high flyers, you were thinking more of like luchas and whatnot. And Rob Van Dam came out of nowhere in ECW and just showed the world a whole different style of wrestling, I think. Just the moves he was doing, man. I can't talk highly enough about Rob Van Dam. And
oh, true.
I just wish he'd come back.
Him and Sabu. I mean, Sabu was another one. I mean, his was a little more on the extreme side. But, you know, he was no stranger to flying in the ring either. I mean, a lot of these, you know, ECW guys, a lot of the hardcore guys, they love to fly. I mean, I think we all know we can both see the difference in our styles here, Credo, and what kind of high flyers I liked and what you did.
Definitely. You know, it's been a part of the business for many years. You know, in WWE, it wasn't that much in the spotlight. Like I said, years ago, you had the guys like Hogan, Warrior, and whatnot, and it wasn't really what they're doing today with these guys, because throughout the years, when you look at pro wrestling, you think of big guys, you know what I mean? Andre the Giant. These little guys who these high flyers are were never really looked at as pro wrestlers. I mean, they just didn't have the height on them, and it was like, well, what are you going to do for us? And then, you know, we've seen what they could do for us. You know, they're definitely the hold that spoke in the wheel that's holding it up. You know, they're definitely that cornerstone in wrestling. They're definitely a big part of it now. And I'm so happy, like I said, too, that of what they're doing with them nowadays, because it was almost like they were written off for good. And it was almost making everybody angry to where you're having Rey Mysterio go after the World Heavyweight Championship to where it's not believable. You know what I mean? You're going to tell me this guy who's a buck 80 is going to go against the 380 pound. You know what I mean? To where it's like, okay, it's pro wrestling, but still, you know, it was like when Rey Mysterio won the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, I was just like, no, just stop. Come on. I don't think there's anything wrong with a cruiserweight being the cruiserweight champion. I think you almost have to look at it as like a UFC standpoint. You know, the lightweights, the felterweights, the whatever weights. It's not that they're
felterweights, he says.
It's not that they're, you know, less of a champion. It means they're the top of their division, and I think that's how they need to definitely boost that cruiserweight championship nowadays of what it means to be that. You know what I mean? To where I'm not necessarily going to say there's going to be another Rey Mysterio-esque WWE champion, But at the same time, I like how these guys are split off into at least the divisions that they should be in, if that makes sense. But
oh yeah, you were talking earlier about, you know, the good old days where we had nothing but big guys. I mean, the only person who was really doing anything like that was Savage. We were all shitting our pants when a fucking, you know, a heavyweight was doing an elbow drop off the top rope. That was as close as we got to high flyers. And, you know, then we got the Ricky the Dragon Steamboats who really helped change the game. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Just so much has happened since we've started watching. Everything has just seemed to evolve. I mean, look how, like, high flyers and high spots have changed over the years. I mean, you know, a moonsault was a big deal back in the day. Now you're getting guys who are doing
450 splashes and all these.
Yeah, and the 450 splash. Now we have one guy who can do it with a fucking half a turn with it. It's like it's like diving. It's like who the hell is going to outdo each other's dive in like the Olympics and shit? It's ridiculous.
I know. And speaking of this whole evolution of the high flyer, I mean, look at even Lita for what she did for the women's division.
Oh,
back
my
then.
God. Yeah, of course.
I mean, it was this whole brawn panties, whatever bullshit, you know, valets fighting each other. They didn't really have a concept of, you know, almost women's wrestlers. And then you have Lita come in and she's doing, you know, the same, the Swanton bombs and all that stuff. And it's like, no other girl was doing this kind of stuff back then. And, you know, it was just like, wow, well, could we see more of girls like this? Could we see more of the women wrestling like this? And it just opened your eyes to where I felt we had blinders on, like, you know, they're not really doing much. They're just valets. You know, they're going to come out and do this little whatever brown panties match. And then meanwhile, you know, she's coming out doing this, you know, flips and whatnot. So it definitely opened up people's eyes to what a women's division could look like. But they just really didn't have that many, you know, opponents for those girls back then. It wasn't really evolved like it is today, but I mean, definitely have to put her up there in that high flying category.
Let's throw something else out there. Let's talk about high flying going bad. And in this case, I want to talk about the big guys who have done this, who have tried to do the big high flying spot and have failed miserably.
I don't know if you're going to bring it up, man, but I have one thing I'm thinking about, and I don't know if I'll let you keep going, but
with me, I mean, I know the one that stands out for everybody, but the one that stands out for me, and it wasn't even that bad of a spot, but it was the Sid Vicious leg break when he was jumping off the top rope and his leg just snapped in the middle of the ring with Scott Steiner. And I'm just like, oh, why the fuck would you even try that? I mean, it wasn't like he was doing anything all that spectacular, but Jesus Christ, you do realize you're like 300 pounds. You can't, you know, and you know, I remember, you know, I heard an interview where he basically said that wasn't his idea. He didn't even want to do it, but lo and behold, poor Sid Vicious was right. And the leg went kablooey.
Oh, man. The one you made me think about right off the top of the bat was Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle, WrestleMania 19.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. No matter how many times I watch it, I still, like, jump at it. Like, I know it's coming. I know it's coming. And I'm like, geez, man. Could you imagine if he was just, like, an inch, you know, it's like one of those things, an inch to the left, an inch to the right. I mean, he could have been done. Dude. It's so scary to watch. And like at that time, I'm like looking at the ref and watching how far Kurt Angle was away from him. And I'm like, as a referee, and I think, you know, someone's like, well, you really gonna tell Brock Lesnar what to do and what he can't do? And I'm like, man, but when you watch that, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, holy cow, I need to tell Brock Lesnar he's not that close to to Kurt Angle. He's not make it. But I mean, I don't know. It's that adrenaline. He had him going, and he know he did that. He did the, what is it, the shooting star?
Yeah, it was the shooting star press. You know, and he could have paralyzed himself. And you know, there could have been an upside to that. I mean, we would not have had to deal with Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg WrestleMania 20.
The streak wouldn't have ended and all this other stuff.
Yes, the streak would never have ended. Think of the ramifications if you had, you know, man. There would be no Suplex City. The streak would still be alive.
I mean, like, it's so funny because, like, when you look at something like that, and I know we're talking about high flyers, but from that high flying move to what, like, Austin did versus Owen Hart at that SummerSlam one year to where how bad Austin got hurt, man, like, you would think, like, Austin would have had, like, a little scratch from that little, you know, pile driver, but Brock Lesnar doing this and
yes,
man, like I don't know how he's just a beast, obviously. To
okay, one more for you. All right, I got one more for you. Undertaker, I think it was WrestleMania 25 where he went and jumped and dive over the top rope.
Is that where they threw the cameraman? It was Sims. It was the one.
Yes, right. It was, and he just did not catch him. He was not in the right place at the right time. And the Undertaker basically almost spiked himself on the outside of the ring.
Man, they're very precise, calculated moves. And when you weigh this much, you should not be doing these moves, because these guys,
these smaller guys,
man, they fly like feathers off the thing. You know, it's like they're airborne for how long. And man, when you're that much, you're just a sack of, you know, a sack of potatoes just falling and cracking anything. But yeah, I mean, high flying. You have these guys who are trying it, who shouldn't be doing it, and it's just like, stop, guys. I mean, there's a whole division for that now. We don't need to outdo them or anything. Just do your stuff and let them do that stuff. And it's crazy. But I mean, do you think how the high flying has changed over the years? I mean, I go back, like I said at the beginning of the topic, to where, you know, WCW started it for me, and now fast forward to where we have the resurrected cruiserweight division. We have their own show now on the network, 205 Live. Are we going to see more from the cruiserweights? Are we going to see this division expand even further? Or is there always just going to be one cruiserweight champion? Will they ever do anything you think of, you know, like cruiserweight tag team champions or cruiserweight something? I don't know. Or is it just going to be one cruiserweight champion? Or is it too much? It's just too many titles, right?
I don't know. I guess we'll just see how popular it gets and, you know, how stacked. You got to remember, that's only an hour show, and it's a pretty big roster. We haven't even seen everybody wrestle yet on the show. I mean, we only have enough time for three matches. I mean, guys, I remember Ho Ho Loon from the Cruiserweight Classic. I still want to see Tozawa. I mean, I think he's great, 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 great. You can't say enough good things about him. I mean, there's a couple other guys here. Lince Dorado is yet to debut on 205 Live. There's a lot of guys I want to check out. You know, I'd love to see in action more. But I think they really need to, you know, weed out some of the scrubs, because you got to make way for a guy like Austin Aries. I think you need to put a Neville in that division. And these are guys who will have very good careers in that division. I mean, just think of some of the guys you could potentially get who are not there now. And what's great about the cruiserweight division is it also seems to kind of bridge over to NXT, too. I mean, we see a lot of those guys in NXT prior to 205 Live.
Well, yeah.
I mean, Rich Swann was just on this week.
Well, you bring up a good point, though. Okay, so aside from the cruiserweight division, and we're still going with the high flyers here, because you still have, you know, like one half of the Lucha Dragons, Kalisto, or there's no more, but Kalisto, to where he's not in the cruiserweight division. He's, you know, he's still having singles matches outside of that. They haven't classified him. I know you said, you just said, too, you want Neville to be in there, but they really haven't done anything with him with that at all, to where... Do you think, like, high flyers are all across the board? So you have the cruiserweight division with the obvious high flyers, but then you still, right outside that margin, you have, like, right, at least for right now, Neville's, Kalisto's, even Austin Aries. I know they're teasing him for the cruiserweights, but, I mean, you still have high flyers in each class, if you will, to where the heavyweights kind of have some high flyers, like the Jeff Hardys of the generation, you know, and whatnot, and it goes down. Do you think each division has to have, like, a high flyer in it, or should all the high flyers remain in that cruiserweight division?
I mean, it depends on your size. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, and I said this last week, a guy like Austin Aries, to me, in WWE, will get lost in the land of the giants. Another classic example. Hideo Itami is not a very big guy. Can you see him in the ring against somebody like a Braun Strowman, even though I think Braun Strowman sucks balls, or a Roman Reigns? I mean, how believable is that? I mean, this isn't the days where we're trying to honor, you know, Eddie Guerrero, and Rey Mysterio was just in the right place at the right time.
Sure. I mean,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's almost like they're still working out this mathematical equation of how everything's falling into place, and we'll see what happens in the days to come. But, you know, it's definitely a cornerstone in pro wrestling. I mean, everybody out there, please, I want to remind everybody, just email us, message us, tweet us, Facebook us. Let us know any cruiserweights that were some of your favorites, or just the high flyers in general, which is what we're talking about. So any high flyer. I mean, we've talked about Bam Bam Bigelow and New Jack in this, for crying out loud. So I think even
I gotta think outside the box, Credo. I can't help myself.
Well, you know, even today, like Finn Balor doing stuff that we've, you know, never seen a lot of people do. Finn Balor's up there. Sami Zayn is another high flyer, which if they let him loose a little bit more, we could see what he even has to offer. You know, there's guys that are outside that cruiserweight division that are still doing a lot of things nobody has done before. So I feel like it's scattered throughout each division, and it's interesting to see how each and everybody will be used throughout the years. But I don't know. I think there's room in every division for a high flyer here and there.
Oh, yeah, no question. There's no question. Let's throw one more thing out here before we end this topic, Credo. Give me a Mount Rushmore of high flyers for you.
Mount Rushmore. All right. Well, even though there's some of even though he's not my favorite, I think, like I said in the beginning, he was one of the first people that I kind of recognized as it. So I definitely you got to put Rey Mysterio up in one of them.
Oh yeah.
So he'll be up there as on the Mount Rushmore of high flyers. Another one I'm thinking of, you know, I'm gonna go back to one of my favorites. Rob Van Dam's got to be up there. He's definitely another guy that has, you know, done stuff that no other wrestler could before in the high flying aspect. So that's two. We got Rey Mysterio, RVD, and now two more. I think for the next generation, I would definitely put Finn Balor up there. Man, and just one more. One more to pick. Man. And I'm trying not to pick somebody as recent, too, as, like, in the cruiserweight division, but I'm just thinking around, you know, throughout the world. Is there anybody that comes to mind when I think of high flyers on the Mount Rushmore? Rey Mysterio, RVD, Finn Balor. Man, and I don't know. Okay, I got it. Taka Michinoku.
Oh, God.
I have nobody else.
All right, I'm going to throw this one out there. Mine's a little more conventional than Credo's, but I'm going to go Jushin Thunder Liger.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go Jeff Hardy, like I said before. God. And that's the thing. I had the goddamn list in my head, Credo.
I threw you off with Taka, didn't I?
No, you did. You really fucking did, you dick. And you know what the funny part was? Is I had three, and I had to really think about four, so I'm gonna put AJ Styles in there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, after that, what was it, a 450 he did off the rope the other night? So, I mean, he's doing stuff that nobody else is doing, too, so definitely a high flyer. Like
and
I said,
that was the thing, yeah, the cruiserweights, he's a, you know, classic example. Before he became more of a rounded wrestler, he really was just more of a high flyer. And, so I went Liger, Hardy, AJ Styles, and, of course, Rey Mysterio. You have to put him in there. He's just like the godfather of high flyers in America, even though he's what he is.
Definitely. You know, talking about these high flyers, I mean, it keeps putting my mindset into the cruiserweights. But, you know, from Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, AJ Styles, Kalisto, there's a lot of guys in the current WWE landscape. And there's a lot of other guys throughout the other companies. But, you know, we're going to talk about the cream of the crop. You know, they're all out there. But when you look about it, when you say high flyers, the first thing I want to go to is the cruiserweight division. But then when you start thinking outside the box, like you said, you know, we brought up Bam Bam Bigelow. He brought up New Jack flying high, right? There's a lot of other categories these guys get into. But, yeah, I mean, it's just amazing when you start to think about it. The guys who are actually doing these moves that nobody else were doing was more than a cruiserweight. So it's quite interesting. I think something else we can probably touch upon later on in the years to come. But, guys, once again, Facebook us at Another Wrestling Podcast. You can tweet us at @AWrestlingPod. Just go to AnotherWrestlingPodcast.com. You'll find all those links and much more. Subscribe us, like us, write us a review, all that fun stuff, right?
Yeah, what he said.
And if you really want to, give the hotline a call, 802-297-7672. That's 802-AWP-7672. Hey, man, you know, it's fun talking about the high flyers, but I think I'm going to be flying high right now. I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah, me too. I got to do some beer drinking, and then I got to go to bed for some reason.
Hey, man, it's time to RVD it before you go to bed. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to 316 it, goddammit. Drink a few Angry Wisers.
Till next week.